Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. How do your underlying beliefs about money predict your financial behavior and financial well-being? Rick Kaler joins us today as part of a series of conversations we're having that explore the world of financial therapy and financial planning. Rick Kaler is a wealth advisor and owner of the Kaler Financial Group. He's co-authored 4 books on the psychology of money, and he joins us now on the phone. Rick Kaler, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori. It's good to be with you today.
Before we talk about money script, our previous conversation, we were talking about inflation and from the macroeconomic perspective. And I'm hoping, because you just recently on your Personal Finance Weekly column, which people can subscribe to and get that in their email inbox every week, you talked about inflation and how that sort of comes home to our in a practical way about our personal incomes and what we sort of believe about inflation being good or bad and raises or not getting a raise. Can you lay that out a little bit for us in the sense of how this macroeconomic policy can affect our personal finance?
How many hours do you have?
Well, we got to make sure we get to money script. So,
actually, that's one of the most exciting columns for me that I've ever written, because there's so much misinformation, and maybe it's just a lack of information, yeah, around inflation. It's just not something that we consider. Our minds anchor, and this is a part of the limbic system. We do this very quickly. We anchor on dollars. And so we don't take into consideration inflation, which requires us to think. And I don't mean that in a condescending, judgmental way. Right. Thinking takes time, and it's effortful. And so our brains default to the limbic system. I mean, research shows that 90% of all financial decisions are made emotionally. So it's no wonder that we don't understand this concept. And I don't know how much in detail you'd like me to go on it, but it's basically the idea, if you were making $50,000 last year and we have a 3% inflation rate, 3% of 50 is $1,500, you've got to make $51,500 to basically be earning the same amount, because to purchase the same amount of goods and services, it's going to take you $51,500 this year. The interesting phenomena comes in that if you get a raise of 3% or $1,500, your brain is probably relatively happy. But let's say that we had a year where we had no inflation, and your $50,000 will still buy $50,000 next year, but you don't get a raise this year. You possibly are not real happy, even though there's no difference between the two scenarios. If you make 50 this year and purchasing power is 50, that's the same as making 50 this year and making 51 next year if you have 3% inflation rate. It's still going to take 51.5 to buy things. Where it's fascinating is if you have a 3% deflation, which we had in the late 1940s. And so now it's going to take 48.5 to buy the same amount of goods that 50,000 bought last year, because the prices of things went down. How do you feel if your employer says, we're cutting your salary this year from 50 to 48.5? Probably pretty upset.
Right.
And yet the economic impact to you is the same in every one of these scenarios.
Fascinating stuff. So check out that column, and I do want to move on because we've got a lot to talk about today, but that's the Personal Finance Weekly column that you can subscribe to in your email inbox, and we're talking with Rick Kaler of the Kaler Financial Group. And let's jump into the money scripts, because I was able to go online and take the Klontz money script inventory. It was free, and I had my results sent to me via email pretty quickly, and learned a lot about myself, but we're going to sort of interpret this. And it breaks down into these sort of four categories of money scripts. You want to start, where do you want to begin with what those money scripts are? A quick review of what money scripts are in general, perhaps, would be a good place to start.
Well, yeah, maybe we should start with that for those that haven't been with us before. A money script is a thought or a belief that a person has about money. And typically these operate unconsciously. We're not really aware of them. We have 50 to 200 that operate 24/7. And we call them money scripts because, like a script in a play, they are written by someone else and given to us. And typically they're written by our caregivers. By the time we're 10, we have a pretty good collection of money scripts, meaning what we feel as kids is normal about money. Because as a kid, everything that happens to you basically is normal. Mm. So these money scripts affect every money decision that we do, that we make. And it's very helpful at some point to adulthood to take a time out and take a look at these beliefs about money. We talked about one of my big ones was you got to work hard for money. And what we do know about a script is a script works really good in the play that it was written for. You've got to work hard for money works really good when you work hard and the money comes in. I mean, that's how it's supposed to be. But when you take a role written for a specific play, like Lady Macbeth in Macbeth, and then you put Lady Macbeth in Hamlet, it's a disaster. So when you have a money script that you got to work hard for money, and you work hard and the money doesn't come in, you switch plays.
Right.
And now you have a disaster because that's not how it's supposed to work. So the point is, every money script is partially true and partially false. It just depends on the circumstance. And I haven't found a money script yet that wasn't partially true or partially false. And the more adamant you are that a money script is absolutely true, how could this have any falsehood in it, is a really good sign that this is a pretty big money script for you that probably could serve to really trip you up.
Hmm. All right. So you take the online inventory. We'll give you a start to sort of raise your awareness a little bit, and it's going to give you ideas of the four main categories. What are those categories? And tell us a little bit about them.
Research by Brad Klontz, who is one of my co-authors on some of the books that I've written. He has put these into four basic categories. And the first one we call our money avoiders or money avoidance. This is basically a belief that money's bad, that I don't deserve money, that wealthy people are greedy or corrupt, that it's really, you're really morally superior if you live with less money. So this is one of the main categories that a whole host of money scripts will fall into.
This reminds me of reading the Laura Ingalls Wilder books as a kid, and when Laura would get like an orange in her stocking, and that would be it, you know, or a piece of peppermint candy. And I remember thinking, oh, if only I could be as noble as Laura and be satisfied with this one orange, sort of the nobility of poverty at that point.
One of the problematic disorders that we came up with that's a result of this is we call it the vow of poverty.
Yeah.
Or the universe will provide. So, and in this category, we do see some generalities. And one of the generalities is that it tends to be predominant in people in the helping professions.
Sure.
Psychologists, therapists, social workers, ministers, all will have a tendency of having money avoidance than those in other professions.
So how'd I do in this? I got a 3.5 in money avoidance. So which says that there are some characteristics of that money script in my life. Tell us, you know, when we get our money script scores back, you know, how what can you predict, I should say, in a person's behavior based on their score in money avoidance?
Well, What you can guess is that they're probably not wanting to really think about money much.
Yeah.
This is not the type of person that's going to come into a financial advisor's office, skipping and jumping, or into their accountant, all excited to be there. They will tend to ignore financial statements. They can tend to actually just be in a fog about money. They can tend to be overspenders. They can tend to enable other people, especially children. Mm. They can just have general difficulty in managing a budget, managing their debt. So these are all things that would pop up if a person is very high in money avoidance.
Mm. All right, let's talk about money worship, and then we'll take a break and come back and hit the other two.
And I might add that I was a 3.1 in money avoidance.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I would say my response style suggests that I exhibit one or more symptoms of money avoidance.
Yeah. That one didn't surprise. I actually thought I'd be a little higher on that because I sometimes, if I haven't looked at my, I'll feel the physical anxiety of sitting down to look at things. And then after I'm over, I'm like, well, that wasn't so bad. You know, why was that such a big deal? So I actually expect it to be sort of off the charts on that, just because it can be so hard to look at things and face the reality that's in front of you.
Well, that's it's not an unusual one at all, and especially, I do interact with so many therapists and psychologists, and it's absolutely true that particular profession is usually money avoiders.
All right, let's talk money worship.
Money worshipers, they really believe that what's going to solve all of their problems is more money.
Yeah.
And they also will tend to have the money scripts that would be like you can never have enough money, that there's never going to be enough. And yet, in the same time, they'll find out that pursuing money and working for money doesn't quite satisfy them because you can never have enough, right?
Right.
So you really never get to that point of security or relaxation. Another interesting thing is we find that the higher the score, the more likely the person is to have a lower net worth and carry credit card debt.
Hmm.
So we find this in folks, and it kind of makes sense, is that if I really think more money is going to solve my problem, probably the less money that I have, the more that I'm really bought into that.
Yeah, and it sort of feeds itself in a cycle at that point.
Yep, exactly. And, here you'll find your workaholics that will tend to put work ahead of family or relationships. So that's kind of what we find in this particular category.
We are talking with Rick Kaler, wealth advisor and owner of Kaler Financial Group, and we're going to take a quick break and come back with more with Rick. We're going to talk about the money scripts of money status and money vigilance. Stay with us on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking today with Rick Kaler. He is a wealth advisor and owner of Kaler Financial Group. And if you go on our website, listen.sdpb.org, you can find other conversations we've had with Rick Kaler. You can subscribe to his personal finance weekly column. We'll put links to all that stuff up on our website after the show today. And we're going over some of my results and some of the Klontz money script inventory. That's K-L-O-N-T-Z. You can find it online, but we'll put a link up as well. And it's a free inventory of sorts. And we've been talking about money avoidance and money worship. And two more main categories of money scripts that we have to cover today in our remaining 10 minutes or so, Rick. We've got money status and money vigilance. So tell us a little bit about money status and how it impacts people as a money script.
Yeah, the folks that buy into money status really link their self-worth with their net worth. So they typically like outward displays of wealth. They can typically be a little bit more materialistic. They can, because of that, they can be prone to overspending. They really buy into the fact that if I live a virtuous life, that I'm going to be taken care of, that the money is going to be there. And we find typically somebody that's really high in this particular money script category probably grew up in lower socioeconomic households, which is kind of interesting because
right.
I would, yeah, normally think, well, heck, if you grew up in a affluent or a wealthy house, you might be more prone to this, but it's not really true. Because they tend to really look at and prize social standing. So overspending, sometimes gambling is an issue here, or being financially dependent upon others. A financial infidelity can be another issue in this particular category. That's keeping a secret from your partner or your spouse around money.
So how does that tie in? Because when, you know, I scored on this a 3.43, which says I exhibit some of the characteristics, and boy, I don't consider myself a materialistic person at all. I don't think many people would. But boy, when I was married, and I'm not anymore, I hid those expenses. I confess, because there was conflict there around
exactly.
money. So,
yep.
And there was that financial dependence and things like that. So then you can sort of see where those tendencies came forward. So why is hiding in expenditure part of this money status thing? Huh? Explain that to me.
Well, I think that could tie into overspending. Just trying to, if it's spending that I'm trying to hide from my spouse,
sure.
Or the fact that what I really paid for this item can tie into that. There's all sorts of different ways that we can keep secrets from spouses. I know my wife was keeping a secret from me. I actually did an interview with Jeff Zaslow of the Wall Street Journal many years ago, and I came home, and it was on financial infidelity, and I was explaining it to her, and she got real quiet.
Yeah.
She says, I've got a secret. I'm like, what? Yeah. What? She says, I'm supporting a little girl in India, and I never told you about it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, that's it? Oh, okay.
Phew.
Then I got quiet. I said, wait a minute. How much? So,
I used to just say everything was on sale. You know, I mean, everything that you brought in, you'd be like, well, that was, don't worry, it was on sale. And it wasn't, or, you know, I didn't know if it was, or, you know, and I feel a little guilty about it now. But, you know, there was this sense that, you know, you had to always be thrifty and prove that you had been as thrifty as you should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can take a number of different twists and turns. I think a survey found 44-45% of all partnerships have some type of financial infidelity in them. So it's very common.
All right, money vigilance.
Now, money vigilance, these people are really alert around money, watchful, they're concerned. They think it's really important to save and to work for money, to not be given money. They tend to be pretty anxious around their money because they're so alert, because they're so watchful. So they also tend to be somewhat secretive about their money and their status. Unlike the money status people, they're going to probably try and keep it a secret how much they are really worth. This could be your millionaire next door that drives a Ford, where your money status person may drive a BMW. So being secretive, they'll also tend to keep secrets from spouses. They will naturally tend to be frugal. So they can actually be prone to underspending.
So what does it say when someone like me, so I got a 3.88 on money vigilance, which is my highest number, and we just have about a minute left. But then in other areas like money avoidance, I was almost as high. So if you have scripts that are sort of almost contradicting each other is my question. What does that tell you?
Oh, that's when you need financial therapy.
There we go. There's a lot going on there.
But, you know, and it's perfectly normal. I'm kind of.
Yeah. So I'm bearing my financial therapy woes to the world here.
Yeah. No, it's very normal to have these conflicting money scripts. And that is very, very normal. And you can see how it kind of sets us up for a pretty good internal struggle around all this and why it's so important to be aware of these things.
All right. And that's why we're having these conversations with you. And folks can go online to listen.sdpb.org, look up the Kaler Financial Group online, get the Personal Finance Weekly column, and send me your questions in the moment at sdpb.org if you have questions for Rick Kaler, because we'll be talking to him in the future. Just scratching the surface again, Rick. So I guess you'll have to come back next time.
Okay. I look forward to it.
Thanks for your time.